Hi, I'm Joanne DeVito, and I'm the dance choreographer for Once Bitten. You're listening to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast.
Welcome back to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all vampire movies not covered by other movie minutes. Today, we're talking about minutes 35 to 40 of Blade. Joining me once again for these minutes is...
Aaron Newworth from We Live Entertainment and Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla.
How are you introduced to this film as a young lad?
With Blade, I think my first introduction, if I had to guess, was watching the Spider-Man animated cartoon on Fox in the 90s. Where Blade debuted in animated form there. I know he was around earlier, and I believe Blade's black in the cartoon series?
He is. He's kind of like with Storm, because of just, you know, the way things are with executives. They need to make sure they're appealing to that southern, you know, demographic. And you can't have too dark of a skinned character on screen.
Yeah, it's like a lighter, yeah.
So yeah. Storm and Blade both suffer from being very light-skinned. Mm-hmm. Blade may make more sense considering he was born in America, but Storm being from Africa should be black.
Yeah.
And they corrected that in X-Men 97. So
yeah, they certainly did.
Yes, they did. And in fact, by the way, still better voice over for Storm than we'll ever get in any live action movie, because Storm should have a African accent. She is not American. She is African, like Black Panther, by the way.
It shouldn't be hard to do Storm, and yet they've made it like hard to do over and over again. And
right.
It's strange.
We begin these 5 minutes of the movie with Karen getting into her apartment, and it ending with them mentioning Pearl is feeding, which is... pretty gross. But we thank God we never actually see that happen. As you're not part of those 5 minutes, do you know who Pearl is?
Like, outside of this movie?
Well, actually, I think you are. I think the other 5 minutes you'll be on for...
the other 5 minutes, I have the final second of him being...
Right. So Pearl
destroyed.
Is this grossly overweight vampire, which people have been using now in, like, memes to fat shame people. And he is, on the commentary, they talk about why is he so grossly fat. It's because he eats, like, I guess they're fatty, the blood from the hearts of children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read about that before.
And that's like, wow. I would have loved to have seen just, like, a pile of children's bodies in the corner. And then just a bunch of, like, husked out, you know, hearts just slopped into a bucket or something because they're completely drained.
That would have went well with the audience.
And
for sure.
Karen being a doctor being like, those are human hearts, and they're really small.
Yeah. Pearl's a disgusting thing. I don't know what else to say about it beyond. I'm not too upset that I don't have to talk about Pearl in further detail, but...
Yeah, we'll get back to him later on when he's a little bit bacony. Karen in her apartment, the nothing unique cop shows up, and then he gets pepper sprayed with the garlic pepper spray that Whistler gave her. And he's like, garlic? Spray me with garlic?
And yeah, it's supposed to work on vampires. I mean, like, but the first alert, he just kind of walks in. Like, you know, it's 98. Like, obviously there's tension when it comes to interactions between police and black people. Watching it now.
No! Really? In the 90s? you get out of here. Nothing bad happened between the police and black people in the 90s.
Watching it in 2025, it's like, this dude just walked up inside of her house. this is not a good advocacy for cops right now at all. Regardless of the fact that he's a cop, but not there representing the NYPD per se, but it's just an interesting bit of imagery to think about. Just this innocent woman in her own apartment being accosted by police officer just because he felt like coming in.
Yeah, and they never get into the blackness of Blade. You notice that in this film or any of the Blade films?
It's not explicitly remarked upon, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Series that very much could do more with that, it chooses not to.
Yeah, I mean, there is a scene where Blade is captured by the police in the third one, and there's like kind of an indication that they're arresting him because he's black, but it's not heavily implied. More than just, like, I think a passing joke about his people and that sort of, like, language. But
you're not wrong.
Movie,
I mean, I mean,
in this movie, they never even acknowledge, I think, that he's black.
I mean, you're not wrong. I would say for one, black culture certainly like loves Blade. Like that's just, it's very much
they never mention that he's black, and I think that's a big deal.
In terms of how his general swagger, how he carries himself around and what have you, there are aspects that certainly are praised by black culture. The other thing, though, that's very much Wesley's own deal in all this. He very much likes being an action star who is an action star. He doesn't necessarily need to be defined as a black action star, which is kind of part of it. Like, he is a proud black man, but the idea that he can portray a character named Blade that is as popular as it is without it being popular specifically because it is black, but just because Wesley Snipes is a cool motherfucker, that works in his favor in the way he likes to see things.
It's funny, the podcast that you're on, which is two black guys that talk about the Godzilla films, which, up until the more recent Godzilla films in America, which I still don't think I can remember a black character in the Monsterverse.
There are a couple, but go on.
Oh, there are? Okay. Godzilla movies have been primarily, made in Japan, which, that's not a minority. That's their culture. That is their film franchise. Made them
It's not an area where there's not a lot of black people, especially in the 60s and
not
making
a lot of black
specifically.
People in Japan. Yeah. I do remember seeing a post one time, someone saying there's no black representation in Japan. Then what do you call him? And it's a picture of Godzilla. And I'm like, that's not the same thing.
It's fun to see the idea of claiming certain things, which, I mean,
and also,
if anyone wants to provide the argument, go for it. But, I mean, but yes, you're not wrong at all, for sure.
The reason I bring this up also is because Aaron Taylor Johnson is in the first of the Godzilla Monsterverse films from 2014, and I saw yesterday he is the father of the main character in 28 Years Later.
Yeah,
that's it. He's not the main character of that movie. You find out very quickly. You're like, oh, he is not the main character. It is this 12-year-old boy, Spike.
Am I missing a connection here? I'm trying to like, yes.
Oh,
I,
well,
I
the, you cover Godzilla films, and Aaron Taylor Johnson's in that, and he was. In
oh, okay. Just specifically that.
I just
Aaron
saw 28 Years Later, and he's
got it. Okay. I thought there was some other connection. Beyond.
And if I do a deeper dive, I guarantee somebody from 28 Years Later worked on one of the Blade films or the Blade TV show at some point.
Yeah, sure. but yeah, no, you're not. Yeah, Aaron Taylor Johnson. When it comes to Godzilla, he is certainly in that movie. He's adequate. That's my general take, but he's not given a whole lot to do.
No.
28 years later, I like him a lot in that movie.
Back to Karen's apartment. What do you think of the way her apartment is decorated? This is the only time we see it the entire film.
In terms of the decoration, it's like, okay, it's set design. That's nice. The more I look at it, looking at these minutes and what the purpose of it is, it is arranged in a way where Blade can throw somebody around and smash just enough stuff, which I do appreciate. Like, it just seems more evidence that it's like, because we're only going to be here one scene for a very specific purpose, we're like possibly providing more things that don't necessarily have a reason for being there to identify your character, as much as we just want like stuff to be around for Blade to toss his cop into, which that amused me.
Yeah.
Just because I was thinking about that. I was thinking, like, what kind of stuff does she have? It's like, it's really nondescript. There's not a lot of stuff that's like informing who Karen is. It's just more of debris that could be littered around the place as soon as possible.
Yeah, she's not. It's not like. So I haven't dated a lot of doctors.
Go on.
I did date, I never saw her place. Because she was living with her parents at the time, because she was getting over a messy divorce. So I never got to see like how she decorates, but it just looks like they threw stuff in there that they think 90s women would want. You know,
yes.
It's not African culture, so it's just like this is stuff like I have in my apartment. Let's just get that and put that in her apartment, just so we can. You're right to have stuff for Blade to break when he tosses the cop around, and she's like, you're robbing him, you're gonna rob me too.
I like when Blade just, you know, she's saying about the mace, like, you know, work against vampires, and it's like, who's saying about vampires? And the second he says that, Blade's just there. He just appeared out of nowhere.
Well, he followed her because he knew.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the logic. I mean, just the shot is just Blade's already standing behind him. There's no shot of him like walking into the place or walking into frame. He's just it cuts to him, cuts to Karen, cuts back to him. Blade's there. it's so let's get this out of the way. Let's get to the point of this scene.
We also have a comment about the March of Dimes charity.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, the March of Dimes. It's a thing for that was like FDR put it. I remember this because I remember it was in like the New Deal stuff. FDR put it together for like polio originally, but now it's like I don't even know if it's going on. I assume it's still going on now, but it's a nonprofit thing about like mothers and babies.
It's the mission to end preventable maternal and infant health risks on death and preterm premature babies. It's funded through programs, education, advocate groups, and donations.
Which is, it's such a weird thing to call, for Blade to call out, of all the things to mention as, like, a charity, the March of Dimes. like the United Negro Fund or something like that. It's like, it's not like the March of Dimes.
Oh, no, see, that would be indicating that there's black people in this movie. They can't do that. So, I mean, there's three black people, there's like four black people in this movie, one of which, by the way, I reached out to have on this podcast. She is the tiny little girl who is now all grown up. You know what I mean? She's doing stuff. She looks beautiful today. Whereas this scene, she's just like, oh, she's cute. She tries to fight Blade, and he punches her out one punch. But
she gets some kicks in, but
she has her own website.
He grabs her.
She has her own website. I emailed her, Ebondi or something. I actually got an email back from her people very quickly. We will forward this along to her. Yeah, Ebony Adams is her name. So the show came up in later minutes, and I reached out to her to have her on the show to talk about what were you doing in the party scene, and then how was the fight with Wesley Snipes where he takes you out in one punch, but you get to kick him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he knows where to put his hands up, and clearly in some of the cuts you can see there's something in Wesley's hands.
Like a cushion to catch her foot
really quick. Because he knows how to do these fights himself. He's a trained martial artist. But he is still the paid actor, the highest paid actor in the movie. They do not need him getting hurt by a 12-year-old who can do a high kick. Mm-hmm. I wonder who the stunt double was for the cop. Because he gets beat up a lot.
Blade tossed him all over the room.
I mean, it's definitely not the actor. Unless he is a stunt double, too. Maybe he's a stunt double himself.
It's always possible. The line of the moment there is that really necessary? She's like, just trashing her apartment. He's just going to town on it.
Yeah. Kevin Patrick Walls is who plays him. A lot of people would probably know him as the first victim in Scream. He gets his throat slit open by Ghostface.
He's Steve?
He is Steve. Right at the beginning, Drew Barrymore's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong answer. Steve has to die. He's 55 years old today. He was on The Pretender as well for a number of episodes. And then he was in some awful, crappy movies like Stricken and Soul Keeper.
He auditioned to play Billy in Scream, to play Skeet Ulrich's character.
Oh, that's hilarious. Definitely somebody I want to reach out to try and have on the show, because he definitely got some cool scenes in here. But I didn't realize that if you Google him right away, you pop up with the images of him tied to the chair with his... the duct tape around his mouth and his head.
That's definitely like a convention thing for him. Like,
totally.
It's easily the first thing you put up on there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just interesting that, again, like 2 years, three years prior to this, he got killed by one of the two killers. I don't remember who it was that killed Drew Barrymore.
Well, like, I believe it's Stu that actually kills her. They're both there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they're both of them are in the hat. We like just based on the logic of it, like it can't be just one of them. Stu's the one that actually kills her. I don't know who kills Steve though. That could go either way, just because they're both taunting her at that point. So.
Probably the most useless cop ever, because you know obviously he runs away. This
getting beat up in broad daylight by Blade, by a black man is holding a officer and like beating him up in broad daylight around all the people, and nobody really minds. Like,
but Blade was gonna shoot him in broad daylight, and
also
he tells
a thing,
him to fuck
and people
off.
And people are still like, yeah, all right, New York.
There's a black man waving an Uzi around. Let's, you know, maybe this is something to call the police. This is, like, legitimately something to call the police about, by the way. But
another great line reading, too, where he's like, go fuck yourself, boy. And he's like, oh, fuck me. You fuck this.
Yeah, that's right. Someone tells Blade to go fuck himself.
You fuck this. That's a great comeback.
They get Chinese food on their little stakeout, which I think is funny, because she's eating
it. They sure do.
And I'm wondering if that was, like, maybe, like, they had Chinese on set that day. It was time to do her scene, and she was like, if we're doing a stakeout, can I finish this in the car? I'm starving. And they'd be like, why not? Sure.
It's lived in. That's all. They're in New York. They could be in Chinatown nearby.
That would make complete sense that she asks if she can finish the Chinese food while they're doing the scene, because if they're doing a stakeout...
Well, wait, give it
the...
Blade
doesn't
eat.
Maybe he does eat. They never really show him eating, but, you know, he's all serumed up.
Yeah, I assume his metabolism requires him to do something, but, yeah, it's
not
focused.
I gotta assume he eats something.
Yeah, the main sustenance is, like, the serum, I would imagine, so he's pretty... I figure Blade's like a camel, you know?
Right.
He takes it, and then he's, like, good for a while.
And she thinks they can come back later, and he just smiles at her, like, okay, whatever, you've never done this before. I'm going to go in and throw my big dick around. People are just going to open doors for me because I'm Blade, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, after the cop runs off, too, Blade does give that big speech, you better wake up. the world you know, it's just a candy coating over and all that. He says, you know, gets the big monologue out there.
Yeah, that's one of, among his many, like, trailer lines, basically.
Mm-hmm. But they're good. He delivers them well. It's Blade.
Yes. He would have had trailer lines if he was in the trailers for Deadpool and Wolverine, but they wanted to keep that very, very quiet.
Yeah.
But then it was, like, kind of leaking in the background a bit. You know what I mean? Because people thought they saw Kirk Sticky Smith Jones.
They thought they saw who? Sorry?
Kirk Sticky Fingers Jones.
Oh, Sticky Fingers. Yeah.
Saw him in the background for the other, like, there was another Blade in the film. But I don't think that was ever confirmed that he was in the movie.
No, they would have made a bigger deal out of it, because it's funny.
Yeah. So, it's mentioned that Pearl is feeding, and that's how we end our 5 minutes.
He says, get me Pearl!
I don't care if he's feeding. That's it. I honestly would rather deal with Deacon Frost than go see Pearl. But if Pearl has an appetite for strictly children's hearts, then maybe that's the better deal. Maybe don't engage in Blade. I mean, was he told to do this by Frost? I think so. We'll find out later on. Because obviously he gets dispatched very quickly, so.
I mean, he was given the menial task of finding the woman. Like, you know, that's a prove your worth task. Find the woman, you know, kill her, and, you know, maybe you'll become a vampire. Like, you know, it was a trap, you know. Blade said it, you know.
Definitely.
She was bait, and his job was go after the woman. He didn't expect Blade to be there.
Right.
And, you know, but also for Frost, it's like, well, if Blade, in the off chance that Blade does show up, it's just one of my random guys. I don't care about this vassal, so whatever.
He does not care about him whatsoever.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
People can find me talking on the Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla podcast. My friend Terrence Johnson and I talk about the Godzilla movies on a bi-weekly basis. We just released our episode Frankenstein vs. Baragon and the War of the Gargantuas.
Ooh.
Although this will come out way after that. So, yeah, regardless, we have all fun episodes all around. I'm also the host of Out and Out, Aaron and Abe, a weekly review show for movies. I'm on all the socials there on PS4, and I write movie reviews at We Live Entertainment.
There was a book that came out recently. By recently, I think maybe last year or the year before. It's the English translation of the original Japanese adaptations of Godzilla and Godzilla Raids Again.
Okay, yeah, I know that book. Yeah,
yeah.
I've seen that.
So you get
yeah.
both of those films, and these were novelizations written in Japan mm-hmm. years ago, and they, for the first time ever, have been translated and released in English. I don't know if they've done other films. I know, like, you know, Matthew Broderick's film got a release in a novelization, as well as some of the MonsterVerse films, like Godzilla and Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah.
I don't know if Godzilla vs. Kong got a paperback release, because that was during the time of the pandemic, so... There wasn't as much marketing as that for that film with toys and things like that, but there was a lot for, obviously, Godzilla X and mm-hmm. clearly Supernova will, but that's not out for 2 more years, and we're going to get a second season of the MonsterVerse in between.
Yep.
So you can find me over on my coverage of Blade the TV show on the Dead TV podcast, where we talk about the show starring Sticky Fingers as Blade, or you can pick up Vlada, A Dracula Tale, or Colleen the Vampire, which is going to be running on Kickstarter at the time that this recording would be happening. It's a sequel to Vlada, A Dracula Tale. You can pick it up there, or you can go to my Etsy and pick up Vlada, A Dracula Tale on Etsy, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble. My own little piece of vampire lore. Leave us a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Not Google Play, that doesn't exist anymore, but Amazon Music, sorry. Or send us an email if you have any questions or accolades about the show. We will read them on the air. And we'll be back next week with another exciting 5 minutes of Blade here on the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast.